But we will start now with Keegan Dougal presenting us something about protocols. So Keegan has been an engineer since the foundation of Matrix. And if you use any clients, if you use any bridges, if you use any hosting, any instances, he's probably had a hand in it. So he's the expert on everything Matrix. So it would be, it's very cool to be able to hear from you. And let's all welcome our speaker.
Thank you. So yeah, a bit about myself just to start. I'm Keegan. I'm a staff software engineer at Element. I helped create Matrix back in 2014. And I've been spending the last year working on Federation protocol improvements. And that kind of culminated in this Project Hydra, which you may have heard about in the keynote, and ultimately Room version 12. So I'm going to talk a bit about this in this talk. So when talking about security of the Federation API, we need to kind of get contextualize on what that actually means. So if you've been to any of my other talks, you'd have seen these graphs before. So the idea is that I trust my local home server to deliver me events and things like that, but I don't necessarily trust other home servers. And the when we're talking about improving the security of the Federation API, what we mean is that if one of these home servers is malicious, they should not be able to go and send some kind of data to my home server, which will kind of infect it and corrupt the data on it, which then may also then affect the clients that are running on that home server. So that's what we're trying to protect against. And in order to kind of talk a bit more about what we need to know about what the context is in terms of what is Matrix trying to do in order to know what we're trying to protect. And ultimately, we're trying to synchronize a key value map, which is ultimately your room state. And we're trying to do this without coordination with any central server and without trusting those other servers, to be honest. And we can't really talk about security and information security without talking about the CIA, but by that I obviously mean confidentiality, integrity, and availability. And the main kind of thing here is I'm only going to really focus on availability here, because that's the main interesting aspects that Matrix provides. So the kind of things that we're talking about, if you're not familiar with this, so confidentiality, so between communication between home servers, that's generally encrypted. So this is your kind of transport level encryption. For integrity, this is generally done by each server having their own signing key. And it means that any event they send is signed with that key. So then other servers can know for sure that it originated from that other server. But this availability thing is a bit weird, because what we want to do is we want to allow any server to write into the room without, if they are authorized to do so. But the thing is we want to do that without having a central server. So this is kind of contradictory in some ways, because what happens if you lose your authorization whilst you're writing? So this is kind of trying to illustrate the problem of concurrency by seeing what breaks if we don't consider concurrency. So in this, you've got three servers. You have red, who is an admin. You have green, who is a moderator. And you have blue, who's just a regular user. And on the right-hand side, you've got these little people. And that represents the current member list from the perspective of each server. And everything's in sync and everything's happy. And now three events are going to happen. Blue is going to say hi. Red is going to remove green and will no longer... We'll demote green, so green is no longer a moderator and just a regular user, and green is going to go and remove blue from the room. Now, each local server will apply this update immediately, so they will apply their update, and you can see already things are a bit out of sync, but that's okay. The idea is that once every server has seen all these messages, they will be in sync. That's kind of the aim that we're trying to get here. This is the synchronization aspect. But now what happens is some of those messages make it to the other side, and then, of course, as you receive those messages, you will apply them, and immediately we're getting some issues here, because the green server has rejected effectively the hi message from blue, because from the green server's perspective, blue is not in the room. But from every other server's perspective, blue is in the room. And then again, that gets applied. And then The remaining messages have now been sent to all the other servers. So at this point, every server has seen every other message. And you can see in here, there's been some more problems because from the blue server and the red server's perspective, they do not allow the kick to go through because they believe that the demotion of the green server happened before the kick happened, whereas green is the other way around. The kick happened before the demotion. So this is kind of what breaks when you have a decentralized system, and it's all about the ordering. So the room state has diverged here. We've seen all the messages, and yet we're never going to be in sync again. So what we kind of want to do here is we want to say, okay, we all want to kind of agree on an ordering, and then we can use that ordering for authorization purposes. So if you imagine like a number line, conceptually what you want to do is, you know, you insert A into position 0, insert B into position 1, C into position 2. This is kind of what we want. But because we aren't coordinating between servers, you might both try to insert into the next position. And so what we do is we allow both of those messages, and this forms a directed acyclic graph. So you would have seen this in the previous talk. We confusingly, time is going down the page, not up the page in the previous talk. So this is one of those things. But the idea is that when there is a fork in this graph, these things happen at the same time. They happen concurrently. And it is the job of the algorithm to determine whether C happened before D or D happened before C. And now I need to take a little segue, because when you think of algorithms in decentralized systems like this, you might be thinking of consensus algorithms, but this is really not what we're talking about here at all. And the reason why is because they operate in fundamentally different ways. So consensus algorithms, you may have heard of Raft, which is very commonly used, and they make different trade-offs. So they generally sacrifice availability for integrity, because it means that if you can't talk to a majority of nodes, you won't be able to do that right. You have to wait until you can. Whereas CRDTs, which we spoke about in the last talk, they make the opposite trade-off. They'll allow you to write, but then they might have to roll it back at some point if they realize that, whoops, maybe I shouldn't have allowed you to do that. Consensus algorithms also have an additional property which isn't very good, and things like CRDTs have the, not necessarily the opposite, but they have a better tolerance for faulty servers. This was briefly touched on in the last talk, but I'm going to talk about it a little bit more here because I think it's relevant to kind of mention. So the idea here is that, I guess another way of wording this is that instead of availability and integrity, you can talk about this for safety and liveness. So if you're familiar with decentralized systems, liveness is good things eventually happen, and safety is bad things don't happen. So in the context of Matrix, this will be like, if I send a message, it will appear on other people's clients. That's something good happening. And safety is that if you're kicked from the room, you're no longer allowed to talk in the room, right? For consensus, it's like wisdom of the crowd. So the idea here is that these are students in a room, and they all have to agree on either choosing A or B. And they're initially going to choose some random letters. And what they're going to do is they're going to talk amongst themselves. So A is going to talk to some people, and they will choose the majority letter. So the majority of this is B, so then they'll change their vote to B. And this happens, each student does this, and then eventually, congratulations, everyone has agreed on the same letter. So that's great, we've formed consensus. But the problem with this is if you have malicious students. If you have malicious students, when this student talks to those malicious students, they may lie, and they may say A instead of B. And what's happened here is that A will then no longer change their vote. They won't change it from A to B, and they'll keep it as A. And the other students, maybe they all do converge correctly. Now, this is really bad because a malicious student was able to change and corrupt the honest student. So this is like back on the first slide, we're saying that we don't want malicious servers to be able to manipulate honest or like trusted servers. This is the kind of thing we're talking about. In comparison, convergence algorithms, so CRDTs and Matrix and the like, they do a fundamentally different thing. What they do is they they do talk amongst themselves, but they do this via gossiping. And all they do is just collect all the possible options that you can do, but that could be chosen. And then they apply an algorithm to say, okay, we're all going to apply this algorithm to say, choose the lowest alphabetical answer. And then you have the same output that you've all managed to converge, but you've done it in a different way. One of the interesting side notes here is that whilst all students here have converged, they don't actually know that the other students have converged. Whereas with consensus algorithms, you do actually communicate with those other servers. So that can be relevant for when you're designing your protocol. Which you don't get if you do this technique. But the nice property with this is that if there's a malicious node, so they could maybe stop the gossiping process, for example, but when it comes to applying the algorithm, all that happens is they don't change their answer. But that's fine, because a malicious node has faulty states is not a problem. But critically, they're not able to infect the honest servers in the same way that consensus algorithms are able to do. And this will apply even with a very large number of malicious servers. So long as those two honest students can like communicate with each other and do that gossiping process, that's all you need. So this is why the security of Matrix at a federation level fundamentally is about the algorithm and not about like the number of faulty servers in a room. That's why I'm talking all about this. So it's not something like, oh, you can do Sybil attacks or something on Matrix. You can't because of this behavior. So now back into like how Matrix actually does the authorization of events. If you look in the specification, you'll see these six kind of steps. The first three are not particularly interesting, so I'm not going to talk about it. It's kind of belts and braces, checking that the event is well formed. But the last three are more relevant. The final one is only really done for non-state events, which I'm not going to really talk about. So I'm really interested in the fourth and fifth steps here. So you're passing your authorization checks at auth events and prev events. These are two fields that are inside every single event. And we need to talk about why they exist and what they do. So the first one is kind of positive authorization. So it's saying it's a list of auth events is a list of event IDs which say, I'm authorized to send a message in the room because I'm joined to the room and I have permission to speak in this room. And it's really, really quick to do because you can just load up those events, and assuming those events are valid, you can then check, yep, okay, I can see that you were joined, and yep, I can see that you were authorized. And it will catch really obvious forms of malice. So if you were to try to join an invite-only room, but you've never been in the room before, then there's no way you could produce a valid auth event here. So it's a nice, easy way of catching that. But the second check is in some ways more important because it checks that the event was authorized at that point in time. So in the previous talk, we were talking about this best of knowledge and belief kind of stuff. This is touching on this. So the downside to this is it's kind of slow because you do need to calculate what the room state is at that particular point in time. And that can do state resolution, and that can be slow, and that can impact how quickly you can check these events. But it catches omissions in auth events. So if you were joined to the room and then you were kicked from the room and then you were to send a message into the room, you could just maybe not refer to your kick and refer to the previous join event in your auth events, and that would be a-okay for that top check, but that bottom check will fail because when it loads the state at that point in time, it will correctly then determine, okay, actually this person was kicked, so we're not going to authorize that event. So I want to talk about, in particular, this whole concept of authorizing events at a particular point in time and also why it is slow. So give a toy example. If you have admin joins the room, a moderator joins the room, the moderator sets the room name, and then the admin kicks the moderator. So is the moderator sets the room name event authorized at that point in time? And the answer is yes, the admin, because they haven't been kicked yet, right? The kick happens afterwards. If you were to swap these around, then no, the moderator is not able to go and set the room name. Now, the interesting thing happens is what happens if they're done concurrently. Is moderator setting the room name, like, is that authorized at that point in time? And the answer is yes, it is. Because again, like the previous talk was saying about how concurrent events, it's like those events don't even exist. Those concurrent branches, you may not have seen them, they don't exist. So this is authorized at this point in time, And you might think, okay, well, that's kind of bad, because does that mean kicks don't apply in Matrix? Like, how does, like, concurrent, like, how does this work? And that's because there's this, the idea of the current state, which is the, again, to the best of knowledge and belief, this is the kind of belief side. So the current state of the room is, well, to talk about that, we need to know about all the status at the previous events. So if you look at the moderator sets the room name, the state of the room after the moderator sets the room name are those three events on the right-hand side. And hopefully you can follow how that, how, why that is true. And on the, if you didn't see that, the state of the room on the other fork are just these two events. And the you might think, why not moderator joins? And that's because the room state is a key value map. So the moderator's membership is a key in that map. So the admin kicking the moderator replaces the moderator joins event. And what happens is the current state is a kind of hypothetical event that is formed when you merge together all of the latest events in the room. So you might think, why? Like, why is it? Why does it not include the room name at all? And why is it? Why is it actually behaving correctly? So to talk about that, we need to talk about how you merge forks together. So you can imagine you've got a bunch of events here, you have a fork, and then you have some merge, and you want to figure out what the state is here. And again, the previous talk mentioned things like execution orders. So what you can do is you can just sort this entire graph. This is topological sorting. So you can just define some order, and then you can execute each event in turn. And so long as when you have those concurrent events, you define some sort criteria, like you're sorting admins before moderators, then you can then calculate what the state would be once you have merged, once you reach that merge event. So to give an example, like to apply this to our example here, if you take the events in the graph, you put them into an order, and then you start authorizing them. Admin joins, okay, cool, that's great. It's all authorized. Then the moderator joins, yep, that's completely fine. Admin kicks the moderator, yep, okay, that's fine. And then moderator sets the room name, okay, that's not fine because the moderator is no longer in the room. So that is why the current state does not include that moderator sets the room name event. So that is, yeah, so the current room state is what I've described. So the downside of this approach is that it's very, very slow. Because you have to replay all these events, right? Loads of redundant work, and you need every event in the graph in order to actually do this replay. So there are certain things that Matrix does to improve on this. So conceptually, you can kind of think, okay, well, those two forks have a shared history. So could we just cache, like, you know, cache everything up to event 101? And by cache, I mean replay up to 101 and then just remember the map, right, at that point. And then you can go and apply the events in each fork, and you can do that. So, like, you could do that. That's completely valid. So what I mean by snapshot here is some function that takes an ordered list of events and then outputs the map. That's going to be the room state. But you could actually, there's a few extra things that Matrix does. Matrix doesn't force all servers to have every single event in the room. So it means that you may not actually have every single event that you want to replay. So in that scenario, what Matrix does is it uses this whole idea of taking snapshots. So if you had a snapshot of the room at the red event 150 and at the blue event 150, then could we then merge those two snapshots together to go produce a new snapshot? And at that point, you're not really merging forks anymore, you're merging room snapshots together. And that is what the state resolution ultimately does. It takes it takes a set of room snapshots and produces a new room snapshot, and then it applies in execution order, in this case the merge event, after on top of that that state snapshot. And at this point, I have to kind of no longer use event 101. I need to talk about the kinds of events that you can get. These are things like Bob saying hello, and people joining and leaving the rooms, and people getting being kicked. And if we expand out the forks here, we need to talk about the state snapshots on each fork. So again, I mentioned before about the idea that the snapshot is a map. So if you to calculate what the snapshot is for each fork, you can iterate through the red branch, for example. So on this table here, the column headers are the keys, and then the second row are the values, which are the events themselves. So as you iterate through, you are replacing the keys in the map. And you can see, like, sometimes it's new keys because each member has their own key. And Lucy joining and leaving, it keeps replacing and updating the Lucy key. And you can do the same for the other side, and then you'll get something that looks a bit like that bottom thing. So the state after Lucy leaves is this map, and the state after Zoe joins is this map. The reason why I'm talking about this is because I'm talking about conflicted and unconflicted events in the state resolution algorithm. So here you can see the join rule. Both forks have agreed what the value is for the join rule key, so that is not conflicted. But for Lucy and Zoe, they have different values, so they disagree. And for the topic, there is no value, so that also counts as not being the same, so we disagree. So this is what the specification, so if you read the spec, you'll see something like this, and that's what that means, that you have this concept of, like, these values are the same and therefore unconflicted, these values are different and are therefore conflicted. The reason why I mentioned about, like, oh yeah, these things like joins and leaves and people talking is because some of these events depend on each other. So, like, whether you can join the room may depend on if you've been invited to the room. So you need to have some way of knowing where those dependencies are in the event graph. And we use the auth events key, which we spoke about briefly before, to do that. So this is relevant because in the spec, state resolution does the auth difference. So this is explaining how this works. So the idea here is that if you look at the Lucy leaves event, Lucy leaves event will have an auth events field, and that's going to be referencing Lucy's join, because the leave is valid because Lucy was previously joined to the room. And the Lucy joins event will reference other events, like Lucy being invited to the room originally, and also that the join rule was invite only. So you can do this for all the events, and you end up with a new kind of graph that's forming here. These are the auth chains. It can be very messy to look at these graphs, and only what matters actually is the some of these lines, some of these arrows are redundant. So some of these outer arrows you don't actually need to consider, so you can do what's called the transitive reduction on this graph, and you end up with a bit of a simpler graph. So that's what I'm going to be using to kind of explain this a bit more. So if we go back to our kind of state map here, so we've got the two maps that we want to merge together. What we can do is we can look at this is explaining what the auth difference is going to be. So we can look at the Lucy leaves event, and then we jump back to we follow the arrows effectively on the auth events. So by doing that, we're going to get to Lucy joins. So we're going to include that at some point, and then we're going to follow Lucy joins and we'll see the invite, and we'll include that and include the join rule event as well. And we can do the same on the other side. And now we have a bunch of extra events. Now, effectively, then what the algorithm does is it removes duplicates. So you can see here that the join rule is this. There's two join rule events there. So if every single branch agrees on some of these events, we can just go in and remove them. So if we remove those, the remainder is then added to the calculation to determine what the new merged room state is. And it's these events that end up getting replayed in the state resolution algorithm. So again, why are we doing this again? Like, there's a lot of complexity here with conflicted and unconflicted events, auth differences. What's the point? The point is that we don't want to have to replay every single event, because it could be a lot of events, and we may not even have all of those events. And by doing these calculations, we are basically including all the important events and none of the unimportant events, and therefore we only need to replay the important events. By doing that, it allows us to cope with a partial graph and not have to pull in every single message in the room. But there is a cost to this sort of style of approach. So what goes wrong if you do this is, in this scenario, we maybe don't have the entire red branch. We have the blue branch, but we don't have the red branch. So that means we're going to ask another server to say, hey, what is the snapshot of the room at Lucy leaves, because we merged together state snapshots. But that means that server can change what values it's returning in this section of when you're calculating the merged snapshot. So that can be an issue, because if the server were to respond with an older event, or were to respond with a like completely different event on a different fork, this can cause issues, because this is going to have knock-on effects then to what the auth difference is going to be. And then that means the events that you replay are going to be different, and that can cause state resets. So the inability to make sure that servers have responded correctly to that the two partial synchronization requests can cause state resets. So I define state resets slightly differently to the previous talk. State resets are the unintentional rollback of room state, whereas in the previous talk, the rollbacks of room state were intentional because they were caused by a revocation. So there was like, you were concurrently kicked, and therefore that's the reason why this person's no longer in the room. Whereas if the person's no longer in the room for no good reason, they weren't kicked, they should still be in the room. That is what I've been calling a state reset. So the idea of state resolution 2.1 was to go and fix this class of state resets. And there's been two main changes which have been done here. And now I have all the context to actually go and show you the TARDIS scenarios for this. So hopefully, great. Okay, so this is what we've been using to kind of model kind of failure modes in matrix and state resolution algorithms. This is TARDIS. And you can hopefully now see that you understand that you've got this graph and you have these forks, and that's concurrent events. And you'll see most of the nodes are blue, some are green. The green ones are what the current state is. And you can see that the current state of this room is that Alice has left the room. Bob's and Charlie's have changed their display names, but they're still joined to the room. And in this scenario, you'll notice that their join rule events were set twice, but they're not part of the current state. There's no join rule in this room at all. And we need to, so to understand why that is, I need to do this, because now hopefully you'll be able to understand what these dots mean. So these dots are the state set. This is what the values of the map are on each branch. And you can see you've got like the little orange arrow and the blue arrow. So that is like in the values for each map. And you can see for some of them, they agree. So like they agree, this is the create event, the creator joined and set the power level of Alice. They both sides agree on that, but they disagree about a whole bunch of other stuff. So what the state resolution algorithm will do is it's going to replay those conflicted events. But the thing is that the algorithm starts, at least version 2 of the algorithm, starts by doing that on the unconflicted events. Because the idea was that you have some shared history, which is unconflicted, and then there's some fork, and there's some stuff you disagree on, and therefore it's implicitly that the unconflicted state happened before the conflicted state. But that's not true here, because in particular, if you look at this event, you can see that this is unconflicted. Both sides agree that Alice has left the room, but there's a whole bunch of conflicted stuff which is happening before that. And the reason why that can happen is due to the partial synchronization. Because at this event, we didn't have the entire graph, so we asked the server to say, please tell me what the values are, and it gave an older join rule event. It didn't give this event, it gave an older event here. Therefore, the join rule values were different, and therefore it replays them, but it replays them on top of the unconflicted state. So the first change to do was to kind of, like, because effectively this is breaking causality, right? Because we should be replaying this Alice leaves event. And so the fix for version 2.1 was to effectively honor causality. So here, if I do this and then resolve the states, and then, well, you don't really need to show the state sets anymore. But at this point, you can see here now the green value here, Alice setting the join rule to invite, that has been correctly applied. And the reason why this is now a fixed version is because what's happening is we're not starting from the unconflicted state. We're actually starting from the auth events referenced in the conflicted events. So because the auth events have to be causally before, it means that we are honoring causality, and that means that we will correctly be able to authorize these events. So that was like the first main change, and it was a very easy change to do. It's like a one-line change in the algorithm to do, to just not use the unconflicted state map, but to start from nothing. The second change is a little bit more complicated, but hopefully I have explained enough to show this. So again, we have a scenario here where the interesting part about this is you have Alice, Bob, and Charlie in the room, but then Alice gave Bob moderator, Bob gave Charlie moderator, and then some concurrent stuff has happened. There's been some partial synchronization, and one of those branches is referring to an older power level event. So it means that the power level events, if I toggle this, the power level events are conflicted, right? Because unconflicted stuff is where orange and blue are together, conflicted is where they're not. So we are going to replay this power level event and this power level event. Now, the thing is that, well, hang on, power level events in the auth events, if you look at how the auth events are selected, they will go and refer to the previous power level event. So why, this shouldn't be an issue, right? Because it should be replaying this one, but it doesn't. And to understand why it doesn't, I need to now change this graph to show the auth chains. So these are all the complicated dashed lines. So if I do that by clicking this, you can see a very different graph, because this is all the kind of dependencies, the authorization dependencies, effectively. And you can see that on the one side of the orange side, this event is being referenced, and on the blue side, a different event is being referenced. And effectively, what the auth difference is doing is it's saying, find where those two branches meet, in which case it's this event, and then, cool, you're both acknowledging that you've seen these events, you've considered them, so we're not going to go and replay any of those things. So find where they meet, and then that's it, which means that we would only replay this event, and this event. And that's a problem, because both sides are acknowledging that this intermediate event, this intermediate power level event. So the net result is that version 2 of the algorithm will play this first power level event and the last power level event, but will not play replay the second power level event. And that's a problem, because this third power level event isn't authorized, because Bob is the one who is setting it, but Bob doesn't have permission yet. Bob only gets permission when this event is replayed back, this event is replayed back, but it's not being replayed back. So to fix that, we consider what's called the conflicted state subgraph. So if I do this again. So in this scenario, now you can see that the latest power level event has still been applied. Has been applied. So it's the correct now. We are using the latest power level event. We haven't reset the power level. And the reason why is, if I toggle this, is because we now replay the conflicted state subgraph, which means, and it's easier to explain with this graph, is if these are conflicted events, and if you follow conflicted events back along this graph, the moment you hit another conflicted event, you replay all the events along that path. So that means that we will now replay, because this is conflicted, and because these are conflicted, we will replay this one, 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 so we will, and this one. So we will replay a whole bunch of extra events. And the idea behind this is that we will be replaying the necessary authorization events, which may be required in order to actually authorize the final conflicted events. So that's the two main changes that State Resolution 2.1 makes in version 12 and in Project Hydra. So that's been quite a lot of complexity, right? And really, the only change in all of this is just to replay more events. There's no changes to how we're sorting the events. There's no changes to how we're authorizing the events. And you do have to wonder, whether this whole optimization of not needing the entire graph and not needing to like to minimize the number of events you need to replay, if that is worth that cost. And well, Matrix has been around for a very long time now, so we can actually statistically kind of analyze this, which I did. And the kind of idea is that no, it's not really worth that cost. Most rooms will pull in very few additional events if you were to fully synchronize the graph, particularly if you were to only fully synchronize the state events in the graph. And what was quite satisfying is that the number of additional events doesn't scale with the number of users in the room, which kind of makes sense because these are like room names and room topics and stuff, and the frequency of room name changes isn't correlated with the number of users in the room. So the idea that we're going for here is that if we were to remodel how the room DAG is structured so that you have a bunch of state events all linked together, and then message events are on top of that, then you can fully synchronize the state graph and then ensure that you don't have this partial synchronization issue at all. That would be a better model to have. There are some features like spaces and Matrix RTC, which would be negatively impacted. I'm saying Matrix RTC because when I did this study, this was before sticky events existed. So sticky events removes some of the... So Matrix RTC sent state events. Now it can use sticky events, which are not state events, and therefore they don't need to go into the state graph. So we wouldn't need to fully synchronize Matrix RTC call events. So as a result, we're really looking into state DAGs as like a better, more secure model for synchronizing room state. And so it's been mentioned a few times. So we've got one slide to kind of briefly, because there's no MSC for this yet. So it would obsolete a couple of federation endpoints because they're just not necessary anymore because we're going to have the entire graph. And it aligns way more with existing CRDC literature. So we can make use of some of the literature that is out there, particularly on set reconciliation algorithms. We can actually use that to, if you've got two servers, one server's done a bunch of stuff that the other server's unaware of, the other server's done a bunch of stuff, there's some difference here, and then set reconciliation allows you to calculate what that difference is efficiently and then exchange those missing events. And it would really simplify these auth checks because you wouldn't actually need auth events at that point, because if you effectively, by having the entire graph, you are processing the entire graph in causal order, which means that when you see a join, you would have processed the invite already. So if you just load up what the current state is, you know what the auth event should be. So you don't need the sender to include auth events at all anymore. And that really means that you only need to check the event once, which is at the point in time, is the event authorized? So this is the best of knowledge and belief stuff. This is the knowledge side. And ultimately, this model will make it opens up some possibilities to make it simpler for more simple state resolution algorithms in the future. So we could decide to replay more things. We could rely on depth. So depth is a dirty word because people the earlier versions of the algorithm did rely on depth, but depth was an attacker controlled field, and therefore we don't rely on depth anymore. And if you have the entire graph, you can calculate depth, so it's more trustworthy. Or we might change how we're doing the merge function entirely and to not rely on ordering, but that's for another talk. I would like to thank Florian Jakob, who couldn't be here, sadly, but without him, I would not have made anywhere near as much progress as I have done. And I would also like to thank Martin Kleppmann and the Local First community, because again, they have a very similar problem space to Matrix, so working together with them has been definitely standing on the shoulders of giants. So thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for the talk. I see that there are still no questions from the chat, but we can start taking questions from the room. So just raise your hand. Okay. Yeah.
Hi. I'll try to be quick. Do I understand correctly that basically the whole section about state race 2.1 was basically about or the entire approach to computing state? previously was basically about implicitly constructing the equivalent of the state DAG that you talked later. So essentially, this state DAG proposal is about explicitly having the separate graph about state events, which is the same as you would have implicitly calculated earlier.
Yes, that's a good way of thinking about it. I guess the key difference here is the auth chains are intended to be the I'm authorized to do this because of these things which are, you need in order to authorize this event. So it's the dependencies, the authorization dependencies, whereas state DAGs are literally what the previous state events were. So they're not quite the same thing, but if you follow, right?
But the auth chains are used as an approximation of...
Yeah, it's absolutely an approximation. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, got it.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Hey, Keegan. I'm curious why you said that spaces are one of those heavy use cases for state changes. Because presumably once you set them up, they don't change very often. They're not very concurrent, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is, again, just statistical analysis that there are some rooms that have got like thousands of space children, which you would need to synchronize across all servers who are in that room, whereas technically you wouldn't need to do that today. I mean, you would always want to, because you want to make sure that all servers agree on the space children, because that's quite important. So it would be impacted, but I would argue not in a bad way.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
Thanks for the talk. It's really interesting to hear some of the inner workings of how the whole partition stuff works. I was just wondering, though, so it kind of seems like the current way of doing things is kind of optimizations on top of this idea that, like, it allowing home servers to not have the full graph, basically.
Yep.
That's what, like, the auth events and all that is ultimately for. With the state DAG, does that get rid of that? Like, do they need to have the full state DAG now?
Or yes, can you still, okay. They would need to have the full state DAG.
And the idea is that state is smaller than the full mess history, so that's affordable now.
So, yeah, because today we do fully synchronize the auth graph, right? Because you do need to have, you know, where it's had those dashed lines and those auth events going back. You do need all of them going back to the create event. So we already do have an entire graph, but it's, as the previous question said, like, it's an approximation of what the state graph is.
Yeah.
Whereas it makes more sense just to have the entire state graph, because then you actually do have your causal dependencies in there.
Okay, cool. So. Interesting. I'm looking forward to an MSc.
Yeah. Me too.
Matthew has mentioned in the overview of the Hydra stuff at the State of the Matrix that you're working on finality of events.
Yep.
Is there a plan to be able to compress the room state if events are finalized in the chain?
Yes. I mean, yes. If you have finality, you can compact the graph. Yes. I mean, yeah, that would be possible. Again, it's a huge topic to talk about how you could approach this with these sorts of graphs. We do have some ideas, but again, it's like I had a meeting with Martin not long ago talking about that sort of thing. So it's still research, right?
Is the work from faster room join still relevant, this new state resolution algorithm?
Good question. Yes and no. So part of the other changes that you need to do with this, well, what I would like to do with this is to change how you verify events in isolation. So like verifying signatures on events. So what I would like to do is, if those changes are done and you have state graphs, then you can start applying additional... Basically, I can just steal the stuff that the local first people have done, because you can do good optimizations to reduce the amount of work you need to do when you receive large numbers of events. So one of the things they do is, if you've got you know, Alice sending 100 messages, you have 100 signatures on those messages. And today we have to verify all 100 signatures. But if you have the entire graph, it technically, you only need the signature in the 100th message, because they're pointing back to the previous message, by Alice signing the latest message, she's implicitly signing the causal predecessors. And that works so long as Alice only signs, you know, things that she has sent. But it means then that if you do that, you're reducing the number of signatures you need to check from the number of events in the graph to the number of unique signing entities. So that's significantly less. So yeah, you can do tricks like that. So I would probably try to approach faster rim joins from that angle to fundamentally reduce the algorithmic complexity, as opposed to what we do today, which is trying to get the bare minimum and then in the background kind of filter in, but still have the algorithmic costs.
It'd be really nice to take that code out of Synapse.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would. I know. Sorry, Rich.
Like again, from a simplistic view, maybe it sounds like you've come to a conclusion that it was kind of premature optimization of this kind of trying to do more optimized state resolution because we thought that would be a problem. In terms of like, how did that come to be? Is there anything that, or any conclusions that you've reached that could then help where we're designing new parts of the protocol for the future? It's not like, oh,
I don't know. Like, no? I did the client server stuff, right? I didn't know much federation stuff until not long ago. So I don't know why we made those trade offs ultimately. Like, Rich?
It's like where you said you had the data and
Matthew can answer. There you go.
So the reason that it's prematurely optimized like this is, weirdly enough, Ithinco. As we all know, premature optimization is the root of all evil. But I think what we were most worried about were membership events. So we were seeing the IRC bridge got turned on for Matrix very early. Like, it was the first ever third-party contribution to Matrix at all by a guy called Tom Molesworth about 6 days after we launched Matrix. We promptly bridged Matrix HQ to Freenode, as it was at the time, and promptly people's IRC joins and parts started stacking up. And so as we were implementing Synapse, it was like, oh crap, we've got this huge state graph of all these membership events. Well, no, let's go and try to figure out how we handle that in this sort of manner. Now, it's relatively late in the day, I think, you, Keegan, who pointed out, why the hell do we have membership events for chain like this in the Dagger tool, particularly if people are changing their names? Why profile events in there? So one of the learnings, I think, is factoring out things that don't need to be in state. So getting profiles the hell out of state, getting Matrix RTC out of state, and almost making state a bit of an edge case. It's almost an admin thing that privileged users do. And if we'd realized that 11 years ago, perhaps we wouldn't be having to change it in retrospect.
I mean, I see it as like state is for when you need conflict resolution, right? So for Matrix RTC, which just is publishing, like this is again like the calm theorem sort of stuff, where you're just publishing stay in your lane kind of traffic, then you don't need to do any conflict resolution. But for setting the room name, there can only be one room name, so you do need to have that in state.
But we also should never we were never clear on who set state.
True.
Right? Some of the time it's like, well, obviously a moderator will set the room name.
True.
And then we suddenly flip-flop and say, well, to anybody, if joining a video call, needs to be able to set state. And which is it? Because if you let any random person in the room suddenly start filling up your state DAG with random malicious Matrix RTC events, that's a bad thing. So again, it's just an unspecification, probably my fault for not concentrating enough 11 years ago.
So a practical way to kind of potentially deal with that in the future might be some more guidelines around what are good use cases for a state versus the new proposed mechanism, sticky events versus two device messages or EDUs, those things, such that people, I suppose, don't end up abusing them. It looks like, for example, where I did some work on the files SDK and doing file storage in Matrix, is like potentially how that has been implemented may actually cause problems in a similar way to where perhaps spaces may have some behavior. So we could probably do a better job at documenting that, though taking those learnings, putting that in the spec or alongside it somehow, so we don't end up in a cul-de-sac or something in the future.
Yeah.